Hey guys, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to Lockdown Universe for all this time. I really appreciate it. If you are able to, please consider donating like $5, $10 into the Anchor FM account. That way I can focus more on creating good content for you guys, buying better equipment, and making the overall podcast better. I appreciate you listening, even if you can't donate. No problem. Thank you so much for your listenership, and I always appreciate all the fans and the interactions that I have. It's great talking with you guys and great providing content for you guys. Take care. Lockdown Universe, up next. Welcome back to Lockdown Universe, some of the bizarre, peculiar, and unheard of stories of UFO legend and lore. We are back with another interesting story about an abduction that occurred only 7 years after Betty and Barney Hill happened. So, if you're not familiar with Betty and Barney Hill, you gotta go back to Ufology 101, man. I didn't even do a podcast on it because it's so popular and so familiar. It's probably the most popular abduction story ever. You guys all know about that. But this one happened 7 years afterwards on August 7th, 1968. And this happened in Buff Ledge. So this is it's north of Burlington on Lake Champlain. And it happened on an August afternoon where two summer camp employees, Michael Lapp, who was 16 years old, and Janet Cornell, who is 19 years old and was a water ski instructor. So here we have just two kids, basically, right? Just out and about enjoying a boat dock, sitting out, enjoying a nice, was it evening here? I'm trying to see. Yeah, the sun was setting, so it was evening. And so this story comes to us from UFO Casebook, and it's interesting because the two protagonists in our story are named Michael and Janet, like Michael and Janet Jackson, kind of interesting. And that Michael and Janet combination always seems to come up. I see it everywhere. It's very interesting. But so they were watching the night sky as the sun was setting, and they noticed that Venus was very bright in the sky, right, that particular evening. However, what Michael thought was Venus was actually a UFO falling to Earth. And he said, wow, Venus is falling. And so the two continued to watch the light. And this light actually emitted three smaller lights from the larger light. And the larger light quickly moved up and disappeared out of sight. So obviously there was a mothership just dropping off three little drone ships or whatever the case is. And we're about to find out. And these three smaller objects began to move over the lake. They were obviously under intelligent control, and they put on a show for Michael and Janet, doing zigzag maneuvers, loops, and then descended, falling like leaves, which is really just fascinating to me because I just can't envision why a UFO would need to fall like a leaf. I get the zigzag maneuvers and loops and stuff like that because what it would intentionally do would be to distract from radar, right? Or kind of eliminate itself from being seen, or maybe kind of confuse radar. But the whole falling like leaves kind of scenario kind of lends itself to anti-gravity and kind of how, you know, an anti-gravity system would work, and how we've heard these stories in the past where alien abductees have said that UFOs have fallen to Earth like falling leaves. It's very interesting. But what comes next is even more fascinating. Michael would later recall the sound of 1,000 tuning forks when the two craft left and the third craft was alone. So 1,000 tuning forks, like a bing or something like that, I would imagine. What's interesting is they have a picture of this craft, and it kind of looks like it's covered in snake skin, and it has a dome on the top, which clearly shows two beings with their arms up, looking at Michael and Janet. So the last remaining UFO passed over them and shot upward and momentarily disappeared, but it soon reappeared, tilted on one side, and dropped into the lake. A couple of minutes seemed to pass before the object reemerged from the water and began gliding straight towards them. The object was now close enough to see a transparent dome on the top with two childlike creatures inside. Michael would describe the beings as having elongated necks, big heads, and no hair. Their eyes were so large that they extended around their heads, and Michael began to have a sense of a mental communication with these beings. He was watching them intently, and the craft slowly moved overhead and shot a beam at Michael and Janet. It grabbed Janet's shoulder, and Michael pulled both of them on back onto the docks. Suddenly, Michael was overcome with the fear of being kidnapped, of course, right? So he's screaming, "We don't want to go, we don't want to go." And the light from the beam was so bright that Michael recalls being able to see the bones of his hand like an x-ray, which is very familiar because when we put military men in range of one of the first nuclear blasts and they were told to cover their eyes, many of the men recall seeing the bones through their closed eyelids in through their hands that were covering their eyes. So imagine covering your eyes with your hands and being able to see through your eyelids, through your skin of your hands, and seeing your bones. That's exactly what happens during high levels of radiation. So it's very interesting that these poor kids then get radiated from this beam of light. Now, moving forward, Michael's next conscious thought was that of staring back at the object from the dock, and everything was totally black. All he could remember was that there was a liquid feeling to the beam, and then he passed out or blacked out. So what's interesting is now he heard the welcoming sounds of the swim team returning from their meet at Burlington, and the UFO moved up into the sky and flashed its light beam repeatedly and then vanished from sight. Now that's interesting. Flashed its light beam repeatedly, like the beam that captured them. Does that mean that it was shooting out other individuals that it abducted back to their locations where they were previously abducted from? I don't know. But that's an interesting question as to why it was shooting its light beam repeatedly and then vanished from sight. So strangely, Michael and Janet did not discuss what happened to them, and not for a couple weeks until camp season ended, and there were some other strange things that occurred. However, Michael and Janet went their separate ways, and during the next 5 years, Michael rarely thought about that night. In time, though, he began to have disturbing dreams about being kidnapped and abducted against his will. And the dreams would come, like they did, and then they would vanish, like they did. And it would be 10 years later, after the harrowing experience, that Michael made a decision to contact the Center for UFO Studies to find some answers. Investigator Walter Webb was assigned to the case, and after hearing his story, he suggested regressive hypnosis and helped him rid himself of this emotional strife and the frightening dreams. So during Michael's hypnosis is where it starts to get interesting. He vividly recalled the experiences that night on August 1968. He remembered how the beam of light lifted him into the craft's interior, how he entered a bigger craft, and how he saw Janet lying on the table being examined. The small beings shined a light into her eyes, scraped her skin, took fluids from her body, and the aliens all looked alike, Michael recalled. He noticed that those large eyes without a mouth without lips, no ears, and two small openings for a nose. What does that sound like? The grays. Those grays, they just can't get enough of that probing, can they? So Janet underwent her own regression, and her descriptions only went to verify Michael's descriptions. She recalled feeling cold on the examining table with something pulling her hair and pinching her neck. The abduction of Michael and Janet certainly falls within the same patterns of abductions reported by many other people. So, to confirm the facts of this fantastic story, Webb located several other members of the camp who had witnessed strange lights over Lake Champlain that night as well. Two other employees reported a similar experience, which had occurred earlier that same summer, when they observed flying saucers hovering over the lake for about 20 minutes. Now, this is really interesting because here we have not only witnesses of the same night seeing UFO activity, but we have a different that happened earlier that involved another set of employees, two employees, which were abducted. Seems to me that the Grays found that this particular camp was an easy spot for abduction. So, what do we have here? We have these poor kids getting abducted at 16 and 19, suffering with the subconscious knowledge of it for 10 years, and then coming to grips with it and getting regression therapy done so they can find out what actually happened. So this case is very well documented. It's called The Encounter at Buff Ledge. So if you're looking to find out where Buff Ledge is located, you can just look at Google and find out that it's got a location at Camp Milton in Vermont. So here we have Vermont as being a high-level strangeness location. Let's take a look here and just kind of briefly peruse through maps and kind of see what's around Buff Ledge. Well, if we look at Buff Ledge, there's a kind of a lake. Yeah, Lake Champlain. And it's kind of northern Vermont. All those states up there start getting a little sketchy. It's near North Vermont. Actually, it's not far from Montreal. It's very close to Montreal and Ottawa in Canada. So so it's high up towards the border. It's probably those Canadians. I'm just kidding. But so here we have it, right? We've got Michael and Janet who got abducted. What's the takeaway from this story? Let's go back. What exactly happened during this story? So we have these kids who are just hanging out on a boat dock, hanging out. All of a sudden, a UFO pops up and snags them. What does this story sound like? Sounds exactly like the Pascagoula case, where Calvin Parker was abducted with his friend, and they were just out fishing. A lot of these abductions happen when these folks are just alone. That's why we have so many abduction stories, or at least a lot of missing people in some of our national forests. They're out there hiking by themselves a lot of times into the early morning, early evening. Perfect times for abductions. Maybe they're even camping. Perfect time for abductions. So what else is the takeaway from this? Well, one of the interesting pieces is that we had this large craft drop off three other crafts. That's not something that we hear about in too many other abduction cases. The other part of the story that's really interesting is this UFO craft seems to have some sort of snake skin wrapped around it, at least in this picture. So that's very interesting. Don't hear much about that in any other particular case. The other interesting fact is Michael stated that the beam felt like liquid. That's very rare. Probably one of the only story, maybe, where they stated that the beam felt like there was a liquid feeling to it, and then it gave them the sense of free floating. But again, you know, this is, we find new pieces of information with each abduction, right? Not every abduction is exactly the same. Yes, there are very similar portions to the story, but every time we get a new story, there's little pieces that are brand new. But again, they were placed back in the same exact spot. Luckily for them, they didn't get dropped off five cities away. What else do we find here? They didn't remember much about they didn't describe here much about what actually happened on the ship, other than the fact that they got transferred into a larger ship. So Michael got transferred from one of the drone scout ships into a larger ship. So that was interesting. He had this mental communication. He watched these folks very intently. There was a very interesting piece of this story. I believe it was this story. Yes, here we go. Where Michael described the beings as having three pointed web-like digits for fingers. So basically three fingers or three, protrusions that look like fingers. The most important piece of communication that he received from these beings was that their mission was to make life like ours in other places. Quote unquote, make life like ours other places. So there you have it. Exactly what they're doing, the hybridization program, something we all know, but again, just double verified. So what's interesting to me is that it's almost like the alien agenda is to select kind of a cross section of humans. They're not looking for necessarily specific humans always. Because if they were, they probably wouldn't have taken both people, right? In every instance, anytime there's a couple of people there, They take both of them. If they knew right off the bat their DNA sequencing or something like that, they would only take one probably and let the other one just be hypnotized until they return the other individual. But they're just kind of scooping folks up as they see them. So that's interesting. Now, that being said, maybe they only continue to come back for the folks that actually have a need, who show positive DNA, essence that they need to continue to do research on. But as far as, who they pick up, it seems to be just kind of a crosshatch. I mean, look at Travis Walton. He just happened to walk up over a hill and see a craft was there, and they took him with. They probably weren't going to take him at all if they had kept driving, but they stopped to see what was the light over the hill, right? And see if they could find this UFO that they were kind of tracking in the sky. So there we have it. I mean, that's kind of the takeaway, and it's interesting. There's a few pieces that are very particular in this case. The shape of the craft, the fact that Michael went into another craft, a larger craft from a smaller craft. That's something we usually don't hear about. And then just the fact that they actually communicated that they are trying to create their life in other places. We are probably only one place out of many. And we know that there's an intergalactic federation out there that has many different species as part of it. So we know that. And so they're all just genetic farming everywhere, trying to survive. And it's really interesting as we have all these diseases, right, that we've had over hundreds of years, not just corona, but Spanish flu, bubonic plague, other diseases. It's in our own best interest to try to make ourselves, immune to a lot of diseases, and I'm not talking about the vaccine, but I'm talking about like developing our own DNA, developing it so that it's like immune to like anything, any disease. And that's probably a lot of what these aliens are trying to do. They're trying to make the best species that they can make so that their species can survive. And it's interesting, and if you take it a step further and you look at, if you are looking at the whole, conspiracy theory of vaccines and things like that, we could be, trying to make ourselves better through DNA manipulation. We already have it for this vaccine, and we could use it in further science to make our bodies better, to make ourselves healthier, to make ourselves be able to live longer, have less heart disease, and so on and so forth, to be able to live as long as maybe some of these other species are living, because it seems like they're living longer than we are. It's kind of interesting that way. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the thought process along with it, and are examining your own cases and examining your own beliefs. So hopefully you're taking care of your physical health, spiritual health, emotional health, following through on your hobbies and your goals and your dreams, and as always, continue to question the universe around you. Till next time, take care of yourselves. Lockdown Universe out.